I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. This is Democracy Now!
Donald Trump is going to be in Atlanta sometime in the next few days for his arraignment and a mugshot. And he'll be out on $200,000 of bond, which is great for him because he's got the money. But a lot of people in this town can't make a $5,000 bond, and some of them die in jail because of it.
Donald Trump's bond has been set at $200,000 in Georgia, where he faces charges for running a criminal enterprise to overturn the 2020 election. He'll surrender Thursday. We'll speak to Atlanta reporter George Chitty, who was subpoenaed to testify to the Fulton County grand jury about stumbling on a meeting of fake electors and being thrown out. Then to South Africa, where a major summit of the BRICS nations is getting underway.
This BRICS summit is particularly important as it is being held as the world is confronted by fundamental challenges that are bound to determine the course of international events for years to come.
And then to Ecuador, where voters have passed an historic referendum to block oil extraction in Amazon's Yosemite National Park.
Community is a community that has been suffering from the oil industry since before I was even born. And that is the reality of many, many indigenous and Amazonian communities in Ecuador and in the other Amazonian countries.
We'll speak with Ecuadorian indigenous leader Elena Gualenga. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. President Biden visited the fire-devastated Hawaiian island of Maui Monday, pledging federal support for rebuilding efforts. Biden's visit came as the death toll from this month's fire in the historic town of Lahaina rose to 115, with more than 800 people still missing.
But I also want all of you to know the country grieves with you, stands with you, and will do everything possible to help you recover, rebuild, and respect culture and traditions when the rebuilding takes place.
Climate groups are calling on Biden to declare a climate emergency in the wake of the Maui fires to protect survivors from predatory land grabs. Koniela Ng, national director of the Green New Deal Network and a native Hawaiian from Maui, said, quote, "I hope President Biden will protect displaced residents from the disaster capitalists seeking to profit off their grief by instituting a moratorium on foreclosures and subsidizing mortgage and rent payments for at least a year," he said. Meanwhile, the National Weather Service has issued excessive heat warnings from Texas to Illinois, where the heat index in Chicago could top 115 degrees Fahrenheit this week. On Monday, Democrats on the House Oversight Committee called for a federal investigation into conditions at prisons during this summer's unprecedented heat wave. In Texas, where most prison cells lack air conditioning, at least 41 prisoners have died of heart-related or undetermined causes so far this year. In Russia, at least two people were injured Monday as Russian air defense systems shot down four Ukrainian drones near Moscow. The attacks prompted officials at Moscow's four main airports to suspend air traffic, canceling dozens of flights. Elsewhere, a Ukrainian drone struck and heavily damaged a Russian supersonic bomber at an airbase south of St. Petersburg. Meanwhile, the governments of Denmark and the Netherlands have pledged to give U.S.-made F-16 fighter jets to Ukraine after the Biden administration recently gave approval to the transfers. On Monday, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky traveled to Copenhagen, where he spoke outside the parliament to a large crowd of supporters.
Dear friends, today we are confident that Russia will lose this war.
Zelensky's trip comes as the New York Times reports the total number of Ukrainian and Russian troops killed or wounded in the 18 months since Russia invaded is nearing 500,000, a figure that does not include civilian deaths and injuries. The Times cited unnamed U.S. officials for the figures, which estimate 120,000 Russian troop deaths and 70,000 Ukrainian soldiers killed in action. In Thailand, real estate tycoon Srettha Thavisin is poised to become prime minister after he won the backing of a coalition of conservative and pro-military parties in the Thai parliament. Thavisin was the sole candidate considered by lawmakers Monday after Thailand's constitutional court in July suspended lawmaker Pita Limjaroenrat, a top candidate for prime minister whose liberal Move Forward party garnered the most support in May's national elections. Hours ahead of Monday's vote, the former Thai prime minister, billionaire Thaksin Shinawat, returned to Thailand following 15 years spent in self-imposed exile after he was ousted in a 2006 military coup. He was jailed shortly after his arrival to face charges of abuse of power. Former President Trump has agreed to turn himself in to authorities at Atlanta, Georgia's Fulton County Jail Thursday to face 13 felony charges related to his efforts to overturn the results of the 2020 election. Trump's legal team says it's agreed with the Fulton County District Attorney's Office to set bail at $200,000. Trump is expected to enter a not guilty plea one day after he's scheduled to skip the first debate of Republican Party presidential candidates televised by Fox News Wednesday night. Republican state lawmakers in Georgia have invoked a new state law signed by Governor Brian Kemp earlier this year that could allow them to sanction or even remove Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis from office as she pursues the case against Trump and his 18 co-defendants. We'll have more on the criminal case against Trump and his allies in Georgia by speaking to Atlanta reporter George Chitty, who is subpoenaed to testify before the grand jury after headlines. In other Trump news, former Vice President Mike Pence and former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows have recently undercut Trump's claim that Trump declassified documents he took with him when he left the White House. Pence told ABC News Sunday he was never made aware of any broad-based effort to declassify documents, while Meadows has reportedly made a similar claim to investigators working for Special Counsel Jack Smith. On Monday, Jack Smith's office sharply rejected Trump's call to delay the start of his federal election interference trial until 2026, accusing Trump's legal team of grossly exaggerating the volume of evidence being brought against Trump. In Texas, a federal judge in Austin is hearing arguments today on a lawsuit filed by the Justice Department against Republican Governor Greg Abbott over Texas's installation of buoys in the Rio Grande River along the U.S.-Mexico border. The judge could issue an emergency injunction that would force Texas to remove the floating barrier within days. Texas authorities were reportedly trying to reposition the buoys ahead of today's hearing after Mexican officials said the barrier, aimed at blocking asylum seekers from reaching the United States, was installed on Mexico's side of the river. Between the buoys, there are circular saw blades. Dozens of asylum seekers, including children, have been severely injured. This is Democratic Congressmember Joaquin Castro during a visit to the border city of Eagle Pass earlier this month.
It's incredibly dangerous, incredibly inhumane, and it's the reason that I've said that it's barbaric, because it is. You see that go all along there. People getting stuck. There was a dead body that was stuck to this last week. Reports of a child that died. If you go closer to this razor wire, there's people's clothing that has been stuck to the wire because they've gotten stuck in that wire.
In Georgia, Atlanta city officials have announced an intricate signature verifying process that's forced activists campaigning to get a public referendum aimed at stopping a massive $90 million police training complex to delay turning in the tens of thousands of signatures they've collected in support of the measure. Voting rights advocates have denounced the verification practice, saying it can easily disenfranchise voters of color by throwing out authentic signatures perceived to have minimal differences. The city's announcement Monday came just hours after activists opposing Cop City said they gathered more than 100,000 signatures ahead of Monday's deadline to submit the petition. Stop Cop City activists have vowed to continue collecting signatures as a judge granted them more time to turn them in. The move means the referendum may not make the ballot until March, when a competitive Republican presidential primary is taking place. In Kansas, a newly released video shows the shocking police raid on the home of the Marion County Record's 98-year-old co-publisher, Joanne Meyer. An excerpt of the video filmed during the August 11th raid shows Meyer excoriating officers as they search through her documents and electronic devices.
Don't you touch any of that stuff.
Ma'am.
This is my house.
I know.
You're wasting
your breath. Ma'am,
get out
of here. We'll be out of here pretty quick.
Get him out of here.
Joanne Meyer died the day after the raid. The Marion County Record blamed the police action for her death, saying it left Meyer stressed beyond her limits. To see our full coverage of the story, visit democracynow.org. And in California, a beloved shop owner in the San Bernardino Mountains was fatally shot by a man shouting homophobic slurs about a rainbow pride flag hanging outside her business. 66-year-old Laura Ann Carlton died from a gunshot wound Friday evening at her store in Cedar Glen, east of Los Angeles. A 27-year-old gunman blamed for her killing fled the scene and was shot and killed after what officers described as a shootout. Police say the suspect had a history of making hateful and homophobic posts on multiple social media platforms, including X, the site formerly known as Twitter. A recent report by the advocacy group GLAAD documented at least 356 cases of anti-LGBTQIA hate across the United States between June 2022 and last April. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York with Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
We begin today's show in Atlanta, Georgia, where Donald Trump has announced he'll turn himself in at the Fulton County Jail Thursday. Trump's bond has been set at $200,000. This all comes a week after Trump and 18 co-defendants were indicted by a grand jury for running a criminal enterprise to overturn the 2020 election in a case brought by Fulton County District Attorney Fani Willis. Trump has now been indicted four times since late March. But unlike the other indictments, this will be the first time he must pay cash bond. It'll also be the first time, cameras will be allowed in the courtroom. Joining us in Atlanta is George Chitty. Independent journalist in Atlanta, writes the Atlanta Objective Substack newsletter and is co-host of the podcast King Slime. He was recently subpoenaed to testify before the Fulton County grand jury in the Trump investigation, but did not end up testifying. In December 2020, he stumbled upon a secret meeting at the Georgia State House of Republicans plotting to overturn the election by submitting a slate of fake electors. George Chitty has also reported on the dire conditions inside the Fulton County Jail, where 15 people died last year, including LaShawn Thompson, who was eaten alive by insects and bedbugs in his cell. George Chitty's recent piece for Atlanta Magazine is headlined "The Real Behind the Wall: A Look Inside the Infamous, Deadly Fulton County Jail." George, welcome to Democracy Now! It's great to have you with us. Before we go to why you were subpoenaed and you're stumbling on that fake electors meeting, let's talk about where President Donald Trump is turning himself in on Thursday. The Fulton County Jail that you've investigated so well. Explain what this jail is all about, why it is so notorious.
So it's notorious in part because a lot of people are getting killed in it. Before the pandemic, the jail might have two or three deaths in a year. Last year, there were 15, and they're up to seven this year, four in the last 30 days. The conditions are terrible. The infrastructure is falling apart, and the infrastructure is actually difficult to repair because repair people are afraid to go in because the level of supervision isn't safe, in their opinion. The medical services provider pulled out and had to be dragged back in by the county. They have a tremendous staffing problem, which is sort of emblematic of what's going on in law enforcement in general. But in Fulton County, it is an acute problem that is getting people killed.
But, George, isn't the responsibility for the conditions in the jail a responsibility of the local government in Atlanta, which is largely a Democratic administration?
Well, that's correct. The sheriff is elected. The sheriff is a Democrat. The mayor is a Democrat. The city's administrative bodies are all run by Democrats for the most part. Like, we're talking about a systemic problem that is expressing itself, in a problem in the jail. That jail is overfull because it's overfull with people who largely shouldn't be there. Most common charge for somebody being jailed is criminal trespassing, which could be, painting something on a wall. Shoplifting. 5% of the people in there are in there for shoplifting charges. Including the fellow who died last Thursday.
Last month, the Justice Department announced it's opened a civil investigation into the conditions in the Fulton County Jail in Georgia. This is Assistant Attorney General Kristen Clark.
We will examine living conditions in the Fulton County Jail, access to medical care and mental health care, use of excessive force by staff, and conditions that may give rise to violence between people incarcerated at the facility. The investigation will also examine whether the Fulton County Jail discriminates against incarcerated people with psychiatric disabilities.
The people incarcerated in the Fulton County Jail are predominantly people of color, with data showing 87% of the jail population is Black. If you can talk about LaShawn Thompson, who people may remember how he died, but the horror that for the country somewhat blew open or put Fulton County Jail on the map. Again, the place that President Trump is going to turn himself into on Thursday. George.
Gotcha. So LaShawn Thompson was found face down in the toilet in his cell, and he was covered in insects, lice. People have described him as exsanguinated. That's not exactly correct. That's a bit of hyperbole. But he died in squalor. He died like no human being should. And he died in part because, a jailer wasn't checking on him regularly. He was in their psych ward, and they missed him because there was negligence. And plainly there was negligence because the county just settled for $4 million in that case. But he's one of 15 people. And when you start drilling down into the other deaths that have occurred, two people were murdered. One was strangled in his bed. People are dying of preventable illnesses, and a lot of it is tied to mental health problems. The jail is the largest mental health provider in this county, and that's a tragedy all on its own and has to stop.
George, I'd like to turn to the big headline of the week, obviously in Atlanta and even across the nation, the RICO indictments of President Trump and others for the alleged false elector plot. Could you talk about how you came upon this group of fake Republican electors in 2020? Where were you and what happened at that meeting?
Sure. The first thing I want to say is that I take objection to the characterization of what I did as stumbling upon fake electors. I was in a room with probably a dozen other journalists, and I noticed that one of the people we will describe as a fake elector was in the halls. And I questioned why he was there. When he went into a room in the Capitol on December 14th, 2020, I realized something was happening in that room. So I took out a camera, I started a Facebook Live, I walked in, and I started asking questions and was summarily thrown out. But before I was, I asked what kind of meeting was happening, and I was told it was an education meeting. And plainly, it was not an education meeting. I was told later by David Schaefer, the Georgia Republican party leader here, that they had to submit electors in order to maintain their legal case in front of the courts. That has come into legal question at this point. It is the reason why we're looking at this investigation. It is the reason, in part, that Donald Trump is going to have to walk through that jail on Thursday. The fact that I was lied to became legally important, or so I am told, which is why I was subpoenaed. And I testified in front of the special purpose grand jury 1 year ago. I was called last Monday to testify, but it turned out it wasn't unnecessary. And frankly, I think that's a good thing.
And have you been able to tell of the people that you saw in that meeting, which of them have been indicted or were any of them indicted?
Several of them have been indicted. The one that I'm focused on is Kathy Latham. So the woman in the front of a picture that I've actually posted, and it's been up for 3 years on Twitter, is Kathy Latham. She is the chairwoman of the Coffee County Republican Party. She was one of the electors who would have been an elector if the Republicans had won Georgia. I'm reasonably certain she is the one who lied to me and said that that was an education meeting. And she's also all over the video of Donald Trump's crew basically taking apart the voting machines in Coffee County. That is central to this investigation because that act of election interference exposed software that made things subject to manipulation perhaps later. That may be the most dangerous act of, that you can look at in this indictment.
George, if you can, as we wrap up this section on President Trump and what he's being charged with and going into the Fulton County Jail, what's expected to happen? You've just described the most horrific conditions inside this jail. What are we going to know when he walks in? What will he experience?
So I'm just scratching the surface of how bad it is in there. But I don't think he's going to experience any of that. He'll be processed on the first floor in a relatively clean and safe environment. They're going to lock down the entire area around the jail as soon as he arrives. Nobody gets in or out, not press, not visitors, no one. I don't expect him to be there more than 5 minutes. But he will have a mugshot taken. He'll be weighed. There'll be a medical processing. The sheriff has pledged that he will be treated like anybody else in this regard that has to be processed into the jail. But he's not going to experience any of it. And I find it fascinating that in this moment, when you have a former president who might have to set foot in a jail as a prisoner, that suddenly we care about the conditions of that jail. Not you, of course. you worry about this sort of thing because you are decent and kind. But the rest of the world is waking up to this, and I'm gratified to see it.
George, I also want to ask you about grassroots efforts in Atlanta to block the construction of Cop City, that massive $90 million police training complex, which will be the largest in the country. Organizers planning on submitting over 100,000 signatures to force a ballot referendum on the project, but activists put off submitting the signatures apparently on Monday. We're trying to piece all this together after Atlanta city officials announced an intricate signature verifying process that will cost a fortune. Stop Cop City activists have vowed to continue collecting signatures as a judge granted them more time to turn them in. If you can talk about what's going on here, you've covered it. Also, the number of protesters charged with domestic terrorism. And was the Fulton County DA, Fannie Willis, involved with those charges, not to mention the bond group that was also charged?
So Fannie Willis really isn't involved in any of this. This is all coming out of Chris Carr's office. That's the attorney general here in Georgia. And the dynamic between the city of Atlanta and the state with regard to how they're treating these protesters, these activists, is fascinating and deserves more attention. 104,000 signatures, which is close to double the number of votes anybody elected in office in Atlanta has ever received. The mayor is on record saying that this signature match process that they're planning to use, or I'm told they're planning to use, is racist. And the idea that they're going to pull that out speaks to how committed the city is to seeing this police training center, Cop City, get built. I'm amazed at how much political capital they've burned on this, to be perfectly honest. Fact of the matter is, if they've got 104,000 signatures, their threshold is 58,000 signatures, give or take. I strongly suspect they'll make it unless there was something happening that isn't immediately visible to us. I find the city's move surprising.
And last question, we just have 30 seconds, and that is, when you were responding to the question of being subpoenaed, you were subpoenaed, but you ultimately, though you waited sitting there to testify, you weren't called. You said, fortunately, you didn't have to testify. Why?
Journalists shouldn't be getting into grand jury rooms. I am not an agent of the government. I am a critic of the government. It is necessary to be adversarial to some degree. My not having to testify on Monday, to some degree, preserves that ability to be adversarial. And frankly, it makes my sources feel a lot better.
George Chitty, independent journalist in Atlanta. We'll link to your recent piece, The Real Behind the Wall, a look inside the infamous, deadly Fulton County Jail. Next up, a major summit of the BRICS nations, that's Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, is getting underway in Johannesburg. Stay with us. Time by Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Chinese President Xi Jinping, Brazilian President Lula da Silva, and Indian President Narendra Modi have arrived in South Africa for a major summit in Johannesburg of BRICS. That's the acronym for Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. Russia is sending Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov after Vladimir Putin decided not to make the trip to avoid facing possible arrest. South Africa is a signatory to the International Criminal Court, which has issued an arrest warrant for Putin for alleged war crimes in Ukraine. And so South Africa would be obligated to arrest him if he arrived there. While the BRICS alliance was formed in 2006 and it appears poised to expand, more than 20 countries have formally applied to join BRICS, and